there are days when your brain works perfectly. There are days when it doesn't. And so you have to allow yourself that as well. You have to allow yourself to understand that there are going to be some times where, for whatever reason, you're not having the dopamine. And no amount of workout, no whatever, is going to do that. And you cut yourself some slack. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, Jim and Jamie back. And we're with Peter Shackman. Excited to have him here because this is a subject you guys have heard me talk about, something I've lived and something some of our children live. And that's his expertise on the faster brain, ADHD. Peter, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
And Peter, can you help me? It's Shankman, correct, with an N?
You got it.
Excellent. All right.
Yes, we got it right. So it wouldn't be my first time getting a name wrong with something I'm not going to blame on my ADHD, Peter. But when I was reading up on you, you said you found out about your ADHD after you had already sold two companies. I thought that was pretty funny, where it's almost like you acted as if without being held back by anything. And I just would love to hear your take on what it was like finding out, oh, this is me. And I understand how this is actually more of a superpower, you know, the faster than normal.
Yeah. I mean, primarily just stop caring, you know, growing up and being told that you're different and you should sit down, you should stop interrupting the class and you're not going to learn, just sit over there and don't bother anyone. You get used to it. And that's what I assumed through most of my young life that I was, through most of my teenage years and whatever. I assumed I was just an error. That it was very difficult to learn anything, that I wasn't very good in school, that I wasn't smart, that I wasn't talented, nothing like that. And when I got into the real world, my first job was I wound up working in America Online, and I helped found the newsroom at AOL and was told that I could work any way I wanted to as long as I got the work done. And so I'd work at 3 a.m. I didn't realize I was working when other people weren't there, so I wasn't interrupted. And so I could just go into hyperfocus and work for 8 straight hours or 10 straight hours. And I was 3 times as productive as everyone else. And over time, I realized that this sort of way of thinking, way of living was actually a gift. And when I went on my own, after I left AOL, I moved back to New York and I got a job at a magazine. And the magazine had a very different style than AOL. It was show up at 8 a.m. and check in by 8:15. And we have our first meeting at 8:45. And then we have a 15-minute meeting. And I'm sitting there like, okay, this is Russia and this is not okay. And I quit. And I went on my own and I started a PR firm. I had no idea how to do that, but I'd done a lot of PR in AOL. Sort of without having a choice. And let's see what happens. It was a PR firm called The Geek Factory. And I launched it in the beginning of the .com day with the premise that you would run a PR agency and help .com people. And it blew up. And it blew up very, very quickly. And it was sold about 3 years after I launched it. It was acquired. I said, okay, that seemed to work. And then I started consulting for several years. And I enjoyed that. I was making money. And it was just always interesting why it was so easy to do what I was doing. Yet I couldn't do things like remember to take out the trash or couldn't argue productively with whoever I was dating. If we got into an argument, it was always screaming and it wasn't just talking things out. Like, why is this? And you know, probably in my late 30s, I got diagnosed with ADHD. And I'm like, okay, this makes a lot more sense. Things are a lot more clear now. I understand why I am the way I am. But I also saw all the benefits of it, right? Most people didn't start and sell two companies without really knowing how to do that. And by the time I launched my third, which was Help a Reporter Out, which wound up exploding and getting acquired by PR Newswire 3 years after I started it for millions, that was sort of a wake-up call. And that was like, okay, this is ridiculous. I obviously have some talent here. There's obviously some sort of skill set that I have that I need to expand on and explore. And that sort of became the premise behind Faster Than Normal, the concept that just because your brain doesn't work the way everyone else's does, everyone's brains are different. And so to be able to learn how your brain is different and how your brain works and how your brain focuses and how you can use your brain to the best of your ability sort of became my mission. And so in addition to corporate keynote speaking on customer experience and things like that, I really started diving into why my brain was the way it was. And that resulted in the best-selling book, Faster Than Normal. Absolutely. And Faster Than Normal became sort of a worldwide, let's say, phenomenon. I mean, to this day, the book is 7 years old or 6 years old. I get letters every single day. Like, I got one this morning. I just read your book. It changed my life. You're the first person who understands I'm not broken. It's awesome. So that led to a children's book a few months ago called The Boy with the Faster Brain. Mm-hmm. And they're both still doing very well. And so my whole thing is you're not broken. You're gifted. You just have to understand how to use your brain better. And if I can help even just one kid understand that he's gifted and not broken, on the flip side, save him 30 years of therapy trying to undo the damage that was caused by everyone telling him he was broken, I'll take that as a win.
Well, Peter, and there's something I want to back up to, because I think this is really important for a lot of people listening to. So that 36-year-old Peter that found out, was there some clear relief that you felt when you finally got this figured out once it became unveiled to you? Like, what relief happened? Because I know I've experienced that relief. I know other parents with their kids, like, can you describe that relief that you felt, or did you feel any relief?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was relief. It was sort of like, hey, yeah, that makes sense. That's why my brain is the way it is. I equate it to breaking your leg. You break your leg, you sort of immediately know that you broke your leg, right? You see the bone sticking out there. You're like, okay, yeah, I broke my leg. I'm going to have to get my leg fixed, right? Sort of the same thing with ADHD. I knew that I was different. Just putting a name to it, yeah, that was nice. But that didn't really change anything that I was still going to live my life the way I was. It was just like, yeah, this gives me a name and there are probably other people like this. I should explore that.
Yeah,
absolutely. And now how you referenced earlier, relationships, that definitely resonated when I heard you say like, oh, I couldn't even have a conversation. All I would do is react. And I think ADHD has like a high rejection stimulation, right? Like there's any comment made and then there's an argument versus a conversation. How have you navigated that? Because I noticed a ring on your finger. So I'm guessing that the...
It's actually the wrong hand. It's an aura ring.
Oh, I thought it was a mirror. Okay.
No, this tracks my sleep, tracks my activity. I've been dating someone for about 4 years. I was married at one point. Part of Fast and Normal came out of getting divorced and sort of trying to understand why I work the way I work. But mm-hmm. Now I'm a single dad, have a phenomenal 10-year-old daughter. I have her about 60% of the time. She is spectacular. And yeah, we're sort of learning this together. But you're right. If someone is unhappy, if my girlfriend's unhappy with something I've done, I need to stop and tell myself, if she's not unhappy with you, she's unhappy with something you've done. This doesn't mean the relationship is over. It means you might want to look at that one thing that you did. And that's sort of a good thing to stop and think about.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
And how are things with your daughter? Does she have some of these same superpowers that
absolutely. I see it in her immediately. I haven't gotten her diagnosed. She hasn't shown any signs of affecting her schoolwork yet. But, you know, if it does, take the same route that I took. Her mother's quite the opposite. Her mother's very neurotypical with no signs of anything along those lines. And as such, I'm not forcing any of my things onto my daughter. It's sort of if she tells me she's having problems, I see sometimes problems with focusing or whatever, but nothing that has really affected her as of yet. So I'm just taking it day by day. But yeah, she knows that daddy has a super brain and knows that it works. Daddy works better when he does things like exercise. Did my 36 miles this morning on the bike and then had a meeting at her school at 8 a.m. So I walked that. It's about 3 miles. As long as I get that dopamine on a regular basis, I don't have to take medication. I have a prescription, but I don't have to use it if I'm doing the right things.
Yeah. And that's so important to acknowledge that, because I think doing the right things, and like you said, medication, if it's needed, that's great. But also there are other ways to use that superpower body that you've gotten. Now we have 5 children. So far, we know for sure 3 of them have ADHD, 2 of them have dyslexia. Only the first one was diagnosed, but we can see the traits in the next few, but never have we done anything other than, just as you're saying, Peter, rolled out these same tools that we used and were guided with the first one, similar, I'm certain, to those tools in your book. Sometimes you don't need somebody to say, here's what you have, you fit into this box, but it's nice to have these tools. What are some of your favorite tools in your book that you could share with us?
I mean, I think the most important thing for me is exercise has to be first. There's no question about that. But then elimination of choice. The premise that I am very much aware of the fact that if I am presented with a lot of choices, I will paralyze, right? So I have a closet with 2 sides to it and they're labeled. One says office/travel and a t-shirt and jeans. The other side says speaking/TV, like doing this interview, and it's button down shirt, jacket and jeans. And that's it. Everything else is my vest, my sweaters, my suits, all that stuff is in my daughter's room in her closet. And because if I had to look at that, I'm like, oh, that sweater, Larry, give me that sweater. I wonder how she's doing it. 3 hours later, I'm naked in the living room on Facebook. I haven't left the house. So it's a lot easier to sort of understand the way your brain works and focus it on that way.
Limiting choices. I like that.
That's really good.
Earlier too, you referenced that you had 2 jobs and like the different atmosphere you responded differently. And one you loved blowing it out at 3 a.m. and working for 8 hours, and you were really able to show up and be productive there. And then the schedule kind of kept you a bit paralyzed. Do you feel like freedom of activity is better for this busy brain or something scheduled? Because I know for Jim, it's kind of somewhere in between. He wants blocks of time for when he needs to show up, but you kind of need like a big space of free time to work the dog. And then, you know, what do you see and feel?
Everything in my schedule is organized, including free time. Everything in my life is scheduled. So this morning I blocked 4 a.m. to 6:15 on the bike, and then 8 o'clock meeting daughter's school, 9 o'clock grabbed my dog from doggy storage. I was away for the weekend, so I picked him up this morning, walked back home. 10 o'clock, your call. 11 o'clock, boxing. 12 o'clock, I have a meeting. 1 o'clock, I have another meeting. 2 o'clock, I have another meeting. 3 o'clock, pick up my daughter. 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, walk home with her. 4 to 5:30, homework, whatever. Everything in my day is scheduled, and scheduled deliberately because if I have free time, even free time is scheduled, because if there's nothing in my calendar, it will bleed and bleed into something else, and I'll screw up something else. I'll miss something. Oh, you know, I'll just watch something. I'll look at YouTube for a second, and it's an hour later. So everything has to be scheduled throughout my days. On weekends, I tend to schedule in the morning, again, get my workouts in, maybe take a longer ride, something like that, 50, 100 miles, come home, and then I'll allow myself on weekends, if I don't have my daughter, which is about once a month, I'll allow myself the time to just chill. And I won't schedule anything, and maybe I'll order a pizza, maybe I'll watch a movie, whatever. But I give myself at least 1 to 2 days a week to not schedule, at least half a day. But the rest of the time is deliberately scheduled, because otherwise, if it's not in my calendar, it's not real. If you want me to be somewhere, if you want to have a meeting, if you want to do something, it has to be in my calendar. Otherwise, it does not exist.
That's great. We call them rhythms, Peter. By setting rhythms, it doesn't take away freedom. It gives us freedom, especially for guys like you and I, where it's just, they're not chains. It's kind of guardrails. You know what I mean? That's the way that we see it. And one thing that we learned for our kids was putting up the right guardrails. And I'd love to get your opinion on this. I suffered from that. Sit over there, stop bothering everyone, sit down. It was brutal. So we've tried to incorporate education where our kids don't have to sit down. They can get the exercise, you know, that type of schooling. What do you encourage parents who are facing what you and I faced? How do we make sure they're not waiting until their late 20s or 30s like you and I to go, oh, like, how do we avoid them going through what we went through? Because honestly, yeah, it built some resilience, but I'd like to have our kids' talents starting to be fostered much earlier.
Well, that's a lot of what I write about. I mean, the premise behind Fast and Normal was the premise that we all very much have different brains. And the key is to make sure that you are utilizing those to the best way possible. So for some of us, it could be not having a problem, just sitting down, getting the work done as it's required. For others, it could be focusing on taking frequent breaks. The last 10 minutes of any hour in my calendar is for me to go to the bathroom, do some push-ups, sit-ups, whatever, walk up a few flights of steps before a meeting, anything that allows me to get that dopamine kick back up. So it really depends on the person and what that person is feeling and how their brain is working. And there are days when your brain works perfectly. There are days when it doesn't. And so you have to allow yourself that as well. You have to allow yourself to understand that, yeah, there are going to be some times where for whatever reason, you're not having the dopamine, and no amount of workout, no whatever is going to do that. And you cut yourself some slack. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
I like that.
What are some actionable steps for parents and educators? I know you're passionate about helping.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the first one is to understand that not every kid is the same, that children are different, to allow them to discover their own way. So I rarely hold sit-down meetings. The majority of my meetings are stand-up or walk and talks. People call me Aaron Sorkin, in the respect that every meeting I have is a walk and talk. And that's how it should be, right? You get more accomplished in 10 minutes of walking down the street. I'll meet someone on, I live on 42nd and 9th. I'll meet someone and walk up Central Park on 57th. And even just walking to the park or walking in the park or whatever, we get more accomplished, more conversations are held, and you're not sitting there wasting time. And so you're also getting a dopamine hit and a serotonin, adrenaline hit from the workout. So that in itself is something beneficial. So, I mean, that's number one. More exercise, less carbs, I mean, is a huge one. I get it. We all live in a world where we're on the go and running around, and we don't always have that time to make breakfast that's healthy. But there are ways to do it. My daughter, every morning, the night before, if we do, sometimes we'll do overnight oats, right? And we'll put something healthy in there. Sometimes we'll just scramble a few eggs in the microwave in a bowl in 15 seconds, and she can eat them. Right. Other times we'll do a protein shake in the morning. But, you know, I'm not going to have her sit there and down 2 bowls of chocolate frosted sugar bombs and then take the subway to school and wonder why she's hyper as hell the first 20 minutes and then crashes at 10 o'clock and hates everything. Duh. Right. So there was a study in Texas, of all places, where a university took over a school district. And instead of the normal 60% carbs, 30% protein, 10% fats, they switched it up. It was 60% protein, 30% fats, 10% carbs. And they also changed recess from 20 minutes a day to 60 minutes over the course of a day. I think it was like 30 and 30 over the course of the day. And ADHD outbursts in boys over the course of the year dropped 14%, and 80 and girls getting involved in the conversation increased by about, I think, 16% because girls and boys present differently with neurodiverse brains. So imagine that. Imagine something as simple as more exercise and a little healthier eating and no kids are on meds or whatever. So there are a lot of things that parents can do. Observe your kid. Let your kid run around for 30 minutes. Go for a run with them. Go for a walk with them. Do something physical and observe them afterwards. Are they chiller? Are they more relaxed? Are they able to focus on a project? If so, do more of that, right? And look, I'm not a doctor. I'm not saying that these are the cure-alls for everyone. I know it works for me. I know it works for my kid. And if it really matters so much, go get tested. The fastest growing diagnosis category of Americans right now are parents who have diagnosed their kids. And the parents are, yeah, shit, that sounds like me, right? So it's the premise that figure out what works and do more of it.
I understand the children are getting diagnosed, so then the parents are. But does it seem as though now we finally have something to identify as? Or do you think there's actually more people being introduced into the world with this neurodivergence?
I've heard one out of every eight is neurodiverse. That's number one. But number two, it's not something people are afraid to talk about anymore. Mental health, up until very, very recently, was not something people shared. It was a horrible thing. You never wanted to talk about it. Oh my God, I have a mental health disorder. I must be broken. ADHD didn't exist till the 80s. And even then it was very, very quiet. Now I have almost all my t-shirts say neurodiversity is beautiful or ADHD is a superpower, or whatever. I am very outspoken about it because it's not going away. It never has. We used to believe that if you were sick, leeches on your body would take out the bad blood. And then we discovered something called penicillin and oops, well, we kind of fixed that. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with talking about this, especially with kids and making their kids understand. I just helped create this report. I had a little tiny bit to do with it, but neurodiversity and national security, right? It's basically a 75-page report that states that if the United States government doesn't start hiring neurodiverse people and a wider range of cognitive talents and stop calling every single diversity a severe disability, we're going to fall behind even more so than we already have as a country. If you have any sort of security clearance and work for the government in an office and you want to get a pair of noise canceling headphones or change the light bulb to allow yourself to see better or not be so glaring or lower the volume or whatever, you have to see a psychiatrist who has to label you severely disabled in order for you to get those accommodations in the federal government. And that is just
ridiculous. Wow, that's so interesting. It's on your record forever.
And yeah, then so it's these kind of reports that are going to help change that.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. Well, Peter, I know we could talk forever about this. Tell our group, because this is definitely important, a little bit more about your podcast.
Sure. So Faster Than Normal, which is the name of the New York Times bestselling book, as well as the podcast, Faster Than Normal is designed to be listened and digested by people with neurodiverse brains. So no podcast is longer than 20 minutes. You can listen to them on 1.5 speed if you want, but we talk pretty fast on them, so you probably won't have to. And the basic premise behind the podcast is that ADHD is a gift. All forms of neurodiversity are gifts. ADHD is a gift. ADD, whatever. And we talk to people who have used those gifts to their advantage. Everyone from the founder of JetBlue Airlines to Seth Godin to the band Shinedown to the former mayor of Boston to, I mean, you name it. We've had adult entertainment stars on the podcast. We've had people who have created lives that they love and who are doing amazing things with them, all while being neurodiverse and understanding that that's not a setback. It's actually a gift. I think we just crossed episode 300 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Yeah, congratulations.
I want to end with starting point. Parents that don't have the foresight that we have of what we live, their son or daughter is showing signs and sure enough, they have it. What's the first step? Because it can feel like drinking out of an open fire hydrant, I think, for some parents when they find out. What is the first step? Just that first step out of the gates to be able to start to navigate.
I mean, without question, I'd say the first step is to understand that your child is not broken. You know, you might get the diagnosis. You might see that they're doing certain things like, oh my God, this is it. This is it. This is the beginning. And this is a great beginning because all of a sudden, if everyone in life was the same, it would be pretty freaking boring.
Yeah. Right.
And so having someone who has a neurodiverse brain means that not only do they think differently, but they think quicker and they think faster. The problem is we live in a society that basically everyone is a Honda Accord. And a Honda Accord is a very nice car. There's nothing wrong with it. It gets you from point A to point B. It's a safe car. But you've just been told that your son is a Lamborghini or daughter is a Lamborghini. And the problem is they're being taught throughout their lives to drive that Lamborghini like it's a Honda Accord. That's wow. A problem. So start looking at how to drive that Lamborghini like a Lamborghini, and there's nowhere you can't go.
That's amazing. Now, Peter, can you tell me from the moment in which you found out, because you were an adult, you weren't being parented, you had to parent yourself through this. How did life start changing for you?
I think it didn't so much change when I found out I was ADHD because I knew I was doing all these weird things. I knew there was something wrong with me, right? Or not even wrong. I knew there was something wrong with me. And then when I got diagnosed, it's when I started to accept it as a gift, right? And realized like, okay, I'm in the middle of company three right now. There's obviously something good about me. There's obviously something, I have some skills. I could do something, right? I live 24 blocks south of my high school. In the rest of the country, right? In most of the United States, if you still live 24 blocks south of your high school, 30 something years after you graduated, you probably haven't done much with your life. In New York, I could see my high school out my window and like, wow, okay, you're doing okay. It's that premise that I managed to succeed in New York City, the most expensive city in the world, the hardest city to succeed in the world, and I'm doing all right. Now, granted, I graduated with Jennifer Aniston and Marlon Wayans and Omar Epps. So doing all right is relative in my world, but I still feel like I've done pretty okay. And I look at things like that and I figure, okay, if that's what qualifies for broken, I'm fine. I'm happy with being broken, right? Because in my world, all that brokenness taught me to be who I am today. And I wouldn't change that. I was like, oh, well, you know, if you go back, what would you do differently? I'm not a damn thing. Because everything I've done has brought me to this moment. I'm doing okay.
It's great. I know for Jim, some things when he started, as you learned that things were a little bit different, he would have a different set of vocabulary to communicate with. Like, he might would be able to communicate, systems are helpful for me. If I don't have a place to put the keys, can you please choose a place? 100%. Tell me where it is and I'll make sure the keys are there every day.
One of
those kinds of things.
One of the conversations I have with my girlfriend all the time. Honey, let's go out to dinner tonight. What do you want to have? Oh, whatever you want. Not a good answer. Because if it really is whatever I want, we're going to be trying monkey brains and you're not going to like it. Pick three options. From those, I'll choose one. And as soon as she does that, it's fine.
Practical.
Right? Or I've done this. I'm hesitant to say this in case she listens and finds out, but I'll say, honey, guess where I'm taking you for dinner tonight? And her first answer, oh my God, you're right. That's where we're going.
I'm going to steal that one from you, Peter. Feel free. Well, where's the best way to, can they find Faster Than Normal everywhere, Amazon,
Barnes everywhere you can get. The book is available everywhere. And The Boy with the Faster Brain, children's version, is available everywhere as well. The podcast, Faster Than Normal, is available wherever you get podcasts, iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Stitcher, whatever. My email is peter@shankman.com. I answer every single email personally. That is the one thing I will do. I'm not allowed to book anything on my calendar. My assistant took that power away from me 10 years ago.
I used to triple book. I got in a lot of trouble for that.
Yep. The only time of day Jim will book is the exact same time of day.
The reason she took it away from me was because I went to put it on the calendar and it wasn't working. And I'm like, Megan, what's wrong with the calendar? She's like, you booked two dinners on the same night. So I've taken access. I'm like, come on, you're overreacting. That's not a big deal. She goes, you booked them on separate continents. You're done. And I have not had access to my calendar in well over 10 years. But my email, I answer on my own email, peter@shankman.com. I encourage everyone to reach out. I'm at Peter Shankman on Threads. I quit Twitter because it's accessible, but Threads, Facebook, I'm at Peter Shankman on Instagram. I use that a lot, talk a lot about ADHD on Instagram. So yeah, I encourage people to reach out. I'm always happy to chat.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure was mine, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Peter.
Take care.
Cool. Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.